Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, 51551 for your texts, you can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. So they said they were going to do it. Now they've announced it. If you spend €625 in a designated place, I presume restaurants, pubs that serve food, hotels, you can claim back €125. What would you get for €625? Would you get a weekend away? You would. You'd get a good weekend away, wouldn't you? So it'll end up costing you €500 when you claim your tax back. And that's to encourage people to spend money here in Ireland and to give the hospitality industry that's been had a really rough time of it over the last 6 months a shot in the arm. So that's all good news. I was thinking long and hard last night about the pub situation, and I listened to the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, speaking to Claire Byrne yesterday morning, and then she was on talking to Dave McCullough last night on the 6-1 News. It's a difficult one. It's a difficult one. And the reason I think it's a difficult one is because not all pubs are the same. And a pub in Temple Bar and a pub in Glengariff are two different kettles of fish. And the function and the services and the place in the community that each occupy are different. You know, people come into town, tourists, not too many of them around. They go to that pub in Temple Bar and it's a bit, ah! But then down in Glengariff or Ballylickey or Kildangan in Kildare or any place around the country with populations of under 1,000, the pub is a different thing completely. It's the glue that holds the community together for a lot of people. It's the only social interaction they have. And I can see the point of view of people who are saying that the measures introduced by the government are draconian. Somebody called them apartheid, etc., etc. Because, you know, the same rules shouldn't apply to both. But that's difficult when you're making laws. You know, that you, if it's a pub in a certain area with a certain population, then they can do this. If it's a pub in a bigger population with a certain area, they can't do that, blah, blah, blah. The bigger question, of course, is, should we be relying on pubs to provide that service in smaller communities? Should we now think as a society about something different? You know, they say that the lockdown, COVID-19, has shone a light on various things. I saw the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, the other night saying it's shone a light on, you know, where the conditions where people work, as in meat factories and nursing homes, etc., the conditions in which they live, how they travel to and from work and direct provision, and things have to be changed. And you'll be hoping that he'll follow through with that. But yeah, it has shone a light on things. And maybe we should be questioning the whole role of the pub. That there should be something there, definitely. And rural isolation is a problem. But is the pub the answer? Is it not something else? I don't know what that other thing is. I don't know what that other thing is. Remember Michael McDougall suggested cafes. Now, was there a license with the cafes or something like that? Anyway, he was trying to introduce a sort of European cafe culture in Ireland. And part of the argument was, you know, that maybe we pubs maybe don't, you know, they're not, they don't fulfill a role in a modern society that they used to. And maybe we need to do something else. But he was shut down on that. But we need to look at that. Anyway, that's just there. Speaking of Dave McCullough, when he was speaking to Helen McEntee last night, he was outside the convention centre. He was on the North Quays outside the convention centre. And there's always one, because I noticed that on the previous night, or maybe Monday night, when Kieran Mullooly was standing in the square in Kildare, finally on the map, the square in Kildare, there's always somebody who cops what's going on. Oh, there's your man. It's live. It's 6 o'clock. The news is on. And then they get on the phone and they ring somebody and go, go in and turn the telly on. Go in and turn the telly on. And there was a guy last night and he was on his phone and you could see him sort of on the phone backing into position. So the person was at home going, yeah, just your elbows in there. Just move a little bit back. Oh, there you are now. You're full in. And then the realisation that, okay, I'm on the telly. What do I do now? And Barry goes and rugby tackles Dave McCullough to the ground. He's not going to do anything. But he's been on the telly and his mate has seen him on the telly. That's it. Then he goes off board. There were two teenage girls in the square in Kildare. It was in Monday or Tuesday when Kieran Mullooly was on announcing the lifting of the lockdown in County Kildare. doing the same thing on the phone. Can you see me? I'm there. I want to tell you. They got really giddy, as teenage girls do. And they were sort of didn't know, am I in, am I out? What do I do now? Do I wave? Do I dance? Do I do a TikTok move? What do I do? Woo! There's always one, isn't there? Always one. I remember spotting one night, and this was very clever, very clever. I can't remember if it was a window frame company or a disposal company, but definitely they had decided that this is what they were going to do. And they got the truck with the big ad on the side. And just when whoever was doing the report came on, they drove past them very slowly. So you got the full frame, all the contact details. And then they went and did a U-ey or whatever and came back and drove past again. And I think they got three goals out of it to get an ad on national television on the 9 o'clock news. Yeah, he's doing great, isn't he, Dave McCullough? His new job, it's as if he's been doing it for years, as if he's been doing it for years. And the stories they have to cover on news, like we spotted this one, it's an American story and it's Lincoln Council. So that'd be like the county council, you know, Lincoln Council. And there's a councillor there called Ander Christensen. And he's very serious about something. Now, before I play this in, I have to tell you what boneless chicken wings. I had never heard of them before today, but seemingly some people don't like bones in their chicken wings. And as we all know, chicken wings come with bones. So what some restaurants have done is they've got pieces of breast of chicken, right? And they call them boneless chicken wings. They don't call them bits of breast or chicken tenders or chicken nuggets. They call them boneless chicken wings. Right. Now, Ander Christensen, he's not happy about this at all. And he's in a position of power because he's a councillor in the Lincoln, whatever it is, county council or even city council. And he wants things to change. So Anders, what have you got to say of yourself?
Lincoln has the opportunity to be a social leader in this country.
Great.
We have been casually ignoring a problem that has gotten so out of control that our children are throwing around names and words without even understanding their true meaning.
Sounds serious.
Treating things as though they're normal. Huh. I go into nice family restaurants and I see people throwing this name around and pretending as though everything is just fine.
Shocking.
I'm talking about boneless chicken wings. I propose that we as a city remove I propose that we as a city remove the name boneless wings from our menus and from our hearts.
Now you're talking, Andrew.
These are our reasons why. Number one, nothing about boneless chicken wings actually come from the wing of a chicken. Uh-huh. We would be disgusted if a butcher was mislabeling their cuts of meats, but then we go around and pretending as though the breast of the chicken is its wing. Huh. Number two, boneless chicken wings are just chicken tenders, which are already boneless. I don't go to order boneless tacos. I don't go and order boneless club sandwiches.
No,
I don't ask for boneless auto repair.
Of course you don't.
It's just what's expected.
Yeah.
And then number three, we need to raise our children better. Our children are raised being afraid of having bones attached to their meat. That's where meat comes from. It grows on bones. We need to teach them that the wing of a chicken is from a chicken, and it's delicious. I propose that we rename boneless wings in the city of Lincoln.
Yes.
We can call them buffalo-style chicken tenders.
Of course you can.
We can call them wet tenders.
Ah.
We can call them saucy nugs or trash.
Sorry, saucy nugs.
We can take these steps and show the country that where we stand and that we understand that we've been living a lie for far too long. And we know it because we feel it in our bones.
That pun at the end. Come on, Ander Christensen. Making Lincoln great again or something like that. I looked at him and I looked at him again and I looked at him again. And I still don't know if Ander was serious, whether he was taking the proverbial, but it's funny. It's funny. And while we're on cooking, Philip Boucher Hayes, well, he's perturbed as well. He's perturbed about teaspoon and tablespoons and how they appear in recipes. And he tweeted recently, if we can't solve the big things, can we at least find new abbreviations for teaspoon and tablespoon that aren't basically identical? Are they? TSP and TBSP. You see, it's not going to be too much hassle if you put a teaspoon where there's meant to be a tablespoon. But if you put a tablespoon of chili powder where it reads teaspoon, then you have problems. You just have to be careful out there, Philip. And you just have to read your recipe instructions carefully. Teaspoon. But it's at least they tell you. Not like some of them. You know, a sprinkle. Sprinkle of that. A glug of olive oil. What's a glug of olive oil? A handful of basil. Like, is it a handful sort of squashed? Or is it a handful loose? A cup. Even a cup. What size cup? Big cup, small cup, a mug or a cup or a cupping or what are you talking about? You see, they need to sort those things out. I was at a wedding a good while ago and this woman told this story against herself. She had just moved out from the city. She was a career woman, but she decided to stay at home and mind the children. And as a result, she was doing things she hadn't done before. For example, doing the shopping in the local butchers. And she was cooking for the first time. And so she was making a bolognese sauce and it needed a certain amount of mince. So she rocked up to the local butchers in her new little village down in Wicklow somewhere. And she says, you know, two steaks, please. And can I have 1.5 lubs of mince? And I goes, what? Can I have 1.5 lubs of mince? And he said, sorry? Yeah, lubs. LBS. That's what it says in the recipe in the Jamie Oliver book. 1.5 lubs. And why don't they just have pounds instead of the Latin name for pounds? That doesn't make sense, does it? Nobody's questioned that before. That poor woman, she was so embarrassed. Not too embarrassed that she was telling the story to us and we all found it hilariously funny. There you go. Lubs and teaspoons and glugs and sprinkles and handfuls. I hate chicken wings with bones, so I'm on board for a new brand of chicken wings. Catherine says, up Lincoln and Ander. Couldn't rural pubs be operated as clubs with a registered membership of customers, say max 25 to 50 and no more than 6 to 12 in the premises? Full sign in, so contract tracing, etc. Not a bad idea, John. What do people do if they're pensioners and are not paying income tax anymore? Do they give us a discount or a rebate for the holiday? Good question. You see, that's a good question. We'll put that question to the people in charge right now. COVID has certainly put the spotlight on the off-licence and drink for sale in supermarkets. Too easy and really no control. The people in power should grab that issue and change the law, says Seamus. But when you see the Vintners Association coming out and lobbying the government to restrict the sale of drink in off-licences and supermarkets, you know there's something wrong. The only product that can be legally called boneless chicken are eggs, says Bob. Yeah, fair point, Bob. And to borrow a now suspended marketing slogan, I'd say those boneless chicken wings are finger Lincoln good. Hey! Because that had changed it, didn't they? KFC had to get rid of that. Was it not KFC? What's his? Saunders, Colonel Saunders. Finger Lincoln good. That's Alan and Louth. Very good, Alan. And I worked in Italy for 3 years and there, in most towns, there is a community centre where old and young alike could come together to meet. There were facilities for games and many different things would be going on. Young people could come to play snooker or pool and the elderly people gathered to chat and play board games or just drink coffee at the cafe. There would be different classes also going on like yoga, art, etc. I always thought it was a brilliant idea and wondered why we weren't doing it in Ireland. Thank you, says Una. Probably because the pub is fulfilling that function at the moment. But you need, I don't know how you get everybody on board to make something like that work, because it's a huge cultural shift, you know, to convince people that the pub isn't the answer. And even me saying that out loud now, people are shouting at the radio, the pub is the answer, eh? You don't live in rural Ireland. You don't know about rural isolation. Well, I've never been rurally isolated, but I've spoken to people and I've driven these roads, so I can imagine what it's like. And that's what we have to do in the world, isn't it? We have to empathise, imagine what other people's lives are like. And yeah, I can see how the pub works, but is there some other way? Is there some better model that we could use? Anyway, any suggestions, ray@rte.ie, and we'll pass them on to the people in charge. Now, all this week, because he celebrated his 75th birthday on Monday, we're playing a Van Morrison track. Yay! Take it away, Van. Them, featuring Van Morrison. Believe it or not, that's from 1964. I did the maths on it. If he's celebrating his 75th birthday this year, then in 1964, he was 19. 19, and I think he would have been 18 when they recorded that, because they recorded it in April and it was released in December. So that's an 18-year-old Van Morrison sounding brilliant on GLORIA. Gloria. And you're listening to RADIO 1, RT Radio 1. On wings, the flavour of the bones in the wings is what makes them scrummy. Aha. Yeah, it's meat on the bone, isn't it? It's a lot tastier than the breast, I would think. Of course, it's all connected because we this week are looking for Ireland's best chicken wings, and we're reaching a very exciting climax tomorrow when Gina Daly will be in to cook the recipes of our four finalists. We've one more to speak to today. And then whoever Gina decides has the tastiest chicken wings in Ireland will be upgraded to a super duper Weber barbecue. And it's all thanks to Frank's Hot Sauce. I've been listening about the boneless chicken wings, and I have to say I sometimes cook them that way. It's a bit more time consuming, but all you have to do is steam the wings once cooked, pull the bones off, dust them with corn flour and deep fry them. Delicious with your favourite sauce. They're crispy and boneless. That's Jose. No, I think Jose, what they do is they actually, and if you listen carefully to Anders from the Lincoln City Council, who seems to be an expert, they use other parts of the chicken. And then, and this is the problem for Ander, they call them chicken wings and they're not chicken wings. That's horrific that they would do that. How could they? And that's the problem. So it's not a chicken wing with the bones taken out. It's another part of the chicken. When my daughter was about 10, she started baking and called ounces uz. She's married now with children. We still say uz. That's more in turn your. And for uz sugar. Will you please give a big shout out to the crew at City West who are looking after the COVID testing. I had to bring my 5-year-old down for a test earlier. That must have been worrying. And literally everyone we met was so nice and kind to us both. It really did make it easier. So hello and well done. And thank you so much for your service, as they say in the States. Thank you for your service to the crew at City West who are looking after the COVID testing. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at RTE.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We got an email into ray at RTE.ie from Deborah Noon in the Old Head of Kinsale in Cork. And Deborah's on the line. How are you doing, Deborah?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking our call, Deborah.
No problem.
Good. I'll read out your email and then we'll have a chat after that. Dear Ray, hope you're doing okay amidst this new world. I just went back to school as I'm a school secretary in Balance Middle National School and have to leave my 16-year-old dog, Benji, at home. He's a crossbreed and was in heaven when I was at home all day. He loves his walk every day at Garrettstown Beach, lovely beach, which is about 5 minutes' drive from my house. When I leave now in the morning, Benji just sulks and goes back to bed. I was thinking, though, could you do a survey or maybe a phone in and ask who has the oldest dog in Ireland? Benji is 16. Deborah. Now, a few things going on there, Deborah. You don't think that you don't think that Benji is the oldest dog in the world or even in Ireland?
No, he's not. How it started with, I was just down on the beach and a little child said to me, how old is your dog? And I said, he's 16. Oh, is he the oldest dog in the world? And I said, no, he's not the oldest dog in the world. It just came to my mind then, maybe something like, you know.
Yeah, we'd get up
who
to...
who is the oldest dog in the...
Yeah, in Ireland anyway. We'll start with Ireland,
Ireland
will we?
Yeah.
Yes, we'll start with Ireland and see what we do there.
Yeah.
So I'd say, what's the oldest dog you ever heard about?
Just today, actually, I was mentioning to the teachers that one of them, actually, who's near me because we have a lot of social distancing now and things that I don't get near them as much.
Yeah.
And I was just chatting to Kira and I said it to her and she said, you know, my dog is 18 years and 8 months and he died last year.
Right, 18 years.
He was 18.
I'd say
we're going to get
into the 20s, I'd say. I'd say so. The other thing is Benji. Because
Benji.
People were talking about this at the start, but I haven't heard much chat about it now. The fact that, you know, your pets were going to become used to you being around. And
So
Benji had this idyllic world, did he, during lockdown?
Idyllic. Well, he did. He still does. Because we live in an idyllic place. Near the beach and, you know, walk every day. But it was really like just me being with him all the time. And every day he'd just get up, look at me and know we're going out and we're walking and we're follows me everywhere, still looking at me there now.
With his yeah. big puppy dog eyes. Where did the name Benji come from?
Well, it started off when my kids were small. They were into hurling big time. And they played for the local club here. And then they... But anyway, there was a hurling maker, Ben and Jerry.
Oh, yes, O'Connor's. Yes.
They make hurling, O'Connor hurlers.
And they played for Cork, didn't they?
I don't think they did. One of them did,
hurling. Right, okay.
But they made hurlers, O'Connor hurlers, so I decided Ben and Jerry, then I sent Benji. Uh-huh. Now, they wouldn't remember Benji from the Reardons, now I do.
Yes, yeah. Benji was the love interest. He was the son, wasn't he?
He was the son of Benji, yeah, Reardons, yeah.
I remember the Reardons, they were great.
Yeah, great.
And what was
I'm actually originally from Dublin myself, so.
Oh, yeah, and what brought you down to West Cork?
I got married and came down here.
Right.
That's where
and
I
had
I'm
children.
Still here after 32 years, yeah.
How long are you secretary in Ballinspittle National School?
I'm there since about 2004. I want to give a big shout out to all the Royal Brilliants there, and they're doing very well.
Yeah, because
kids are great.
It's trying, isn't it, at the moment? It's new for everybody.
It's new for everybody. The routine is different every day. They're washing their hands, they're sanitising, they spend the whole time. You know, the teachers have a lot to do, timetables breaks. Yeah.
So poor Benji then, he's sulking and whining, and I'd say it's a thing that's happening all over the country.
I would think so, yeah.
And even in the evenings now, can you get him out for a walk on Garrettstown
Beach?
I can, if I want.
He's just I only give him one walk a day now because he's not able to do much more, really.
Poor Benji. What type of dog is he?
He's a mongrel, really. His mother was I got him when he was 6 weeks. His mother was a small little Jack Russell, and the owner said she thinks the father was a sheepdog.
Right. Okay.
So I couldn't tell you, really. So.
Yeah.
But he's very, very astute and very.
So do you think you'll be meeting this child again who wants to know who the oldest dog in the world is? Because Benji definitely isn't.
I will be.
Yeah. So we put out the call there. Benji is 16. And is it Kira or Kieran has new a dog?
Kira. Her dog died last year.
Coco, who was 18 months.
Coco, yeah.
18 and 8 months. Okay.
Do you think there'll be a 20-year-old? I hope there is.
I'd say. I'm always surprised by these things. They'll come out of the woodwork. How are you settling back in yourself?
Into school, is it?
Yeah, into work and school.
Fine,
yeah.
a bit apprehensive at first, but everything... We went back Tuesday.
Yeah.
So this is what, Thursday?
Right. And where are your kids? Where are your children?
Oisin is in Abu Dhabi. He's teaching in Abu Dhabi. So they're on a bit of a quarantine at the moment. They have quarantine watches over there.
How do they work?
I think they just work. They work on the fact that they can't move. They have to stay indoors.
So they've been tracked?
They've been tracked, basically, yeah.
And why is he wearing a quarantine watch?
Because... He works for this Canadian school there. It's a private school, and one of the librarians in the school got COVID.
Yeah.
So they decided to close the school, and they all got these very salubrious-looking watches. You know, you send WhatsApp pictures, you know.
But who did they get them from? From the authorities, is it?
From the school, who got them from the authorities, yeah.
Right.
So they have to stay in for 10 days, and if they don't stay in, they're fined, as he said, about €5,000 an hour money.
Wow. And of course, they're probably all hooked up to a computer. And if you step outside a red light starts flashing.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Imagine
stuff,
that happening
isn't it?
Here.
No. At the start of all this, Deborah, they were saying about the Chinese system, which is, you know, famously Big Brotherish. But it actually worked well for them because they were able to monitor everybody's movements and all that
Absolutely,
sort of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. That's where he is anyway. So I have one in San Francisco and I have one in the Netherlands.
Right.
Three boys.
Now, here, they're coming in now. Here we go, Deborah.
Oh, there they are.
My friend Catherine has a Jack Russell called Jack. Now, how did they come up with that name? And he's almost 20 years old. And he's still going pretty good in Galway, says Bridie. And my Jack Russell called Nipper is 16 and a half. He's partially blind with cataracts and almost deaf. Oh. But he still loves to go out for a ramble at his own pace and have a sniff at each tree along the road. Has always been great company since he was a pup in 2004, says Peter Mulligan. We've a blind dog at home as well. But their sense of smell is very good. It can guide them around. Ben and Gerry O'Connor had distinguished careers playing with Cork, says Pat and Cork. So both of them, according to them. Martin in Connemara says, my dog lived 28 and a half. He died a year ago. He was a Jack Russell and a Pomeranian mix.
28 and a half?
Yes, there you go. Oh, you see, I knew the 20s would be coming in. He was named Connemara. Got him in when he was 6 months old from Nina. What do we see? Are we any other ones there? No, there. That's for the moment. So 28 and a half. Oh, wait, now here's one. We had a Fox Terrier mix. He died last year, 20 years old. So excuse the pun, but little Benji's only a pup by comparison. Hey, Deborah, lovely talking to you. Mind yourself.
Okay.
And will you say hello? Say hello to everybody down in Ballinspittle National School for us.
And you're very welcome to come down anytime.
Oh, yeah, thanks for the invitation. We might take you up when all this blows over.
We're all disposable.
Yeah. Okay. Talk to you, Deborah.
Thanks,
bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
So 28 so far, the oldest dog in Ireland. Now, the Samaritans, which is a brilliant organisation who do brilliant work, have been busier during the lockdown than they have in a long time. If ever, as you would imagine. They took in nearly 500,000 calls last year and now more than ever have become a vital lifeline for those affected by the challenging times we're living in. Rory Fitzgerald is the Regional Director of the Samaritans for the Republic of Ireland and he joins us now from our Waterford studio. How are you doing, Rory?
Good afternoon, Ray. Delighted to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming into our Waterford studio down there. It was described to us before. It's in a lovely setting, is it? You're looking out over the river valley.
I'm down in a tunnel here at the moment.
Oh, are you right? Sorry. Right. Okay. So is your job a full-time job, Rory?
Yeah, my job is a full-time voluntary job.
It's a full-time voluntary job?
Which I took over in May.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't get paid?
Not a dollar, no.
But it's full-time?
Full-time, yeah. Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for that on behalf of everybody who uses the services of the Samaritans.
Well, I think it's important to point out we have 1,500 volunteers and every one of them give their time free too. So, you know, I think they're great people. I'm retired, so I have the time to put into it.
Mm. But there would be full-time people involved in the Samaritans.
We have 8 staff in Ushers Quay with our executive director, Niall Mulligan. But other than that, everybody is volunteer.
Voluntary, right, okay. So let's hear some of the statistics then. Just would you have stats for the last few months?
I don't particularly, but I suppose one of the challenges we faced through COVID was a lot of our volunteers had to stay at home for either cocooning reasons or for, you know, underlying health conditions. So that put us under a lot of pressure and it meant that a lot of volunteers had to do extra duties. Maybe some of us were doing 2 or 3 duties a week.
Okay.
So a big challenge. And I really want to thank the effort that people have put in, both the people that were doing the duties and the people who stayed at home for the right reasons. And I suppose, Ray, I mean, the government kind of led the over 70s to believe that they couldn't go outside the house, but that was actually not a directive, it was a recommendation. So a good few of our over 70s have come back because they're hale and hearty and wanted to support people.
Okay. Well, you have the numbers from last year, which I mentioned already, but the type of call then, did it change during the lockdown or...?
Obviously COVID was more involved, but I suppose most of our issues, which are normally loneliness, relationship problems, depression, anxiety, bereavement, health, mental health, sexuality, work problems, isolation, financial worries, family issues, were all magnified by what happened. As well as being cooped in, that was another major issue.
Wasn't that the case? And you know, we said it here and lots of people said it, that if you're in a bad situation before lockdown, it was going to be exacerbated and magnified.
Absolutely.
By the situation.
And, you know, we all miss sport. We all miss getting out, meeting our friends. A lot of things have been taken away from us. And I think that's a new space for people that were never in that space as well, you know.
Because this is the truth of it. We depend on being distracted a bit, don't we? Sometimes we're not good being left alone with our thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people's interests, people going to the theatre, as I say, sport is a huge thing in Ireland and particularly in rural Ireland, the GAA, rugby, soccer, whatever. And like that was a big, I think we found a big hole in our lives missing those things,
okay.
You know. And, and then I suppose it's important to talk when you have those challenges.
Okay. I want to come back to rural isolation because we've been talking about it already today. But before we get to that, was there a pattern, you know, certain times of the day or anything like that?
No, the calls would be pretty consistent. I suppose, I mean, our most challenging time is, you know, between maybe 10 o'clock at night and 4 o'clock in the morning, because that's when it's dark and when people are really at a low ebb and, you know, they need us most. And we're probably one of the few organisations that are around 24/7. Our service is there every day of the year, and particularly through the night when there's no other services to call on.
116123.
Yeah.
How long is the Samaritans in existence?
Samaritans was formed by Chad Varrer. He's an English Anglican priest in England in 1953. And there's now 201 branches in Ireland, England, Scotland and Wales.
Right.
And the first branch in Ireland was Belfast in 1961 and Dublin in 1970, who earlier the year celebrated 50 years, which was a great event.
So rural isolation then, and you mentioned that, and that would be quite common. And that would have been something that definitely was exacerbated during lockdown because people had to stay in.
Absolutely.
So what's your read on that? What sort of things do people say?
Well, it's often people ring us, like people think, OK, obviously we're one of our main aims is to see fewer people die by suicide. But most of our calls, four out of five calls are about other issues. And we'd often get people ringing us, Ray, who just want to talk about the weather or have a chat to hear another voice because they don't see anybody from morning to night. And, you know, that's quite challenging. And that's a big lift to them that have somebody talk to them for 10 or 15 minutes.
I know, you know, you don't have to have an opinion on this, but the, you know, the whole pub thing has been debated, whether the wet pub should be reopened or not and all that sort of thing. And I was just thinking out loud that maybe it's a time to look at the position that the pub occupies in Irish society. Because there's no doubt down the country that it's an important place for people, for some people. Have you ever thought about that? Is there some other way that might work?
I don't know, Ray, but my personal opinion would be we need to connect people, and that's vital, because if you leave somebody on their own, that's not good. And, you know, this has been a big loss to these people, particularly in remote areas. But also, look, there's loneliness and isolation in cities as well.
Yes,
it's not just rural areas.
Yeah. And what now? Because a lot of people have been predicting that there will be a fallout from the lockdown. For example, there's going to be financial woes for people, more financial woes for people. And various other things. People working from home, that may be a problem for some people. So what do you see coming down the tracks?
I would have concerns that people don't bottle stuff up. And like one of our key messages is talk, talk, talk. And I mean, I'm doing a listening volunteer for the last 10 years, and I certainly know and feel that when people talk, they feel a little bit better. We don't solve problems. We don't give advice, but we provide a safe place, a confidential place with non-judgmental people listening. And my key message would be to talk. And like a vulnerable group are males between 45 and 60, because they will tend to bottle it up. And I think you've seen in recent times high profile sports people and entertainers coming out about their mental health and saying it's not a weakness to talk. It's very, very important. And that's a key message. Also, we would say look after yourself. Have a good diet, sleep, have a relaxation technique that works for you. Now, that could be meditation. It could be having a cup of tea, it could be doing breathing exercises. And exercise is vital. And for mental health, anybody taking exercise, whatever that may be, running, walking, cycling, swimming, a spiritual practice, and that could be regular religion, but it could also be hugging trees or being close to nature. Mm. And here's a couple of things. Reflect on what's good in your life, particularly when times are bad. There is good stuff there, and we sometimes should focus a bit more on the good things. And, you know, don't compare yourself to others, because if we want to have a bigger house, a bigger car or whatever, we'll never be happy. And it's important to be kind of content with what you have, and also limit social media. That can be a negative for people.
And do you talk about drink at all?
Well, we do get people with drink problems and that. And, you know, that's not a good coping mechanism. You know, if you overdo it, I mean, it's fine to have a few social drinks. But if you're overdoing it and it's interfering with your life, it's a poor coping mechanism.
Yeah. Of course, alcohol is a depressant as well. You know?
Absolutely. And we do a lot of work in schools. I do a lot of work with Smashing Times, a Dublin theatre company, where we do through acting, we get through to kids and mental health. And it's one thing that it's amazing that teenagers are surprised to hear that alcohol is a depressant.
That's interesting. We need to educate people, don't we? We do read
absolutely
around
alcohol.
We have a problem with that, though, don't we, in this country? Because if you raise your head above the parapet and criticise drinking in any way, shape or form, you're a killjoy.
Yeah, well, it's part of our culture, I suppose. Yeah. That's the challenge, yeah.
It is the challenge, yeah. So why did you volunteer back 10 years ago?
I retired and I wanted to do something for all my sins in life. And it just happened that I saw an ad for Samaritans. And I have to say it's very rewarding. And look, we're on the lookout for more. We need more volunteers because there's a lot of stuff we have. We want to do outreach work, reaching vulnerable groups like the travelling community, LGBT, rough sleepers, direct provision. And we don't have enough volunteers at this stage to do a lot of that work. So we've 13 branches in the Republic, and there's one probably near any of your listeners. Just ring up and chat, and we recruit a couple of times a year, but it is very rewarding.
116123, or you can email joe@samaritans.ie. And you're looking for volunteers. The number of volunteers, as you say, was reduced during the pandemic because people were unavailable to leave their houses, etc.
We have some of those back. And to be a volunteer, Ray, you don't have to have a university degree. We come from all walks of life, as do our callers. So you have to just be over 18 and be able to listen. And we do our own in-house training. We have fantastic people, our own volunteers, our trainers. And, you know, the training is excellent and teaches you how not to give advice and listen.
Can you remember the first time somebody got on the phone to you and said that they were going to take their own life?
No, but I can remember a call. I tried to be able to unpack the calls, because if you couldn't unpack them, you wouldn't be able to do it. But I have taken
unpack
calls.
What do you mean unpack?
Well, I mean to let it go and not keep thinking about it.
So make an effort to forget it in a way.
Yes, because if you couldn't forget it, you'd end up not being able to support the people. Like, we have to be in a very supportive, neutral mood when we're talking to people. Otherwise, like, for example, if you tell me a sad story and I start crying, is that going to do you any good?
I don't know the answer to that, actually.
What
did I say? Misery loves company. But but probably not.
No. And like, I have taken calls at the deep end of night. I remember one or two calls particularly, and they were very, very difficult. But the person felt better after talking. And you know, most of the time people will feel better after talking. And that's why our service is very important, in my view.
And have you noticed a particular type of person who volunteers and is a good volunteer?
No, you can give me any profession, any walk of life, any class of people, and we have them all in our organisation. And we've people, you know, not much over 18, and we've people a long way north of 70, and they're amazing people. You know, we've one volunteer in my branch who's been volunteering since Waterford opened in 1976. And I just think these people are amazing. They blow me away. They're so fantastic.
That's a long time, isn't it? 1976. What's that? 44 years.
Yeah.
44 years, right. Yeah. So give us the details again then, how people can become
if they volunteers. Contact our local local branch and say they're interested in joining, and there's a kind of selection process now. That would be happening around now. Now, we're a little bit restricted with COVID, obviously, in terms of face-to-face meetings and that. But look, we're always looking for volunteers, normally at this time of the year, normally at the start of the year, January, February. But your commitment is 3 hours a week. Now, we have a lot of people do a lot more time than that, but I do feel it's very rewarding, and we would love to have more people join us.
There's a testimony there from Emily. It was featured in, I think, your annual report. Yeah, I have it here. And it says, this is Emily's quote. I emailed Samaritans because I wanted to explain my feelings to someone who had no preconceived idea about me. I wanted to get everything off my chest, and Samaritans provided me with reassurance and the confidence to do something about how I was feeling.
Yeah, I think that's very powerful, Ray.
It says it all there. Yeah. That short quote, doesn't it, from Emily?
Yeah.
And that's it. No judgment.
No judgment. No matter what our personal feelings are, if somebody comes on a call, we have to support them. That's our brief. Mm.
Rory, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today. Rory Fitzgerald is in a Waterford studio, Regional Director of the Samaritans for the Republic of Ireland. Thanks, Rory.
Can I just thank you, Ray, for supporting our Greenway walk down in Waterford, which is very successful. You promoted it on the radio programme, and Waterford raised €9,000.
Oh, so did you? Right.
Thank you very much for
that. Well, that's a great facility down there.
Fantastic.
Isn't it?
Yeah. We had about 25 people did the walk, the 42 kilometres.
Which way did they go? From Dungarvan to Waterford?
No, Waterford to Dungarvan. In Dungarvan. Appreciate your support.
Okay.
On that.
Well, anytime we can do anything here, you know where we are. Thanks,
okay.
Rory.
Thanks
a
million,
Ray.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We were talking to Yvanna the other day about Oscar, her little Oscar, who they lost last July. He was only five. And the reason we were talking to Ivana was because they had nominated Oscar's name to be one of the names for the storms of 2021 because he was big into the weather. So he's there. He got it. It's there. If we get to O next year, Darcy is there. A, B, C, D, Darcy. But there's a bit of a, I wouldn't say it's a controversy, but it's a bit of a hoo-ha in the UK because H is Hewlwyn, which is a girl's name in Welsh. H-E-U-L-W-E-N, Hewlwyn. So if it gets to H next year in the storms, it'll be called Storm Hewlwyn, which you would have said, oh, that's fine. Yeah, it's a lovely Welsh name, Hewlwyn. The problem is that Hewlwyn means sunshine or blessed by the sun. So they've messed that up. Who didn't know that? The other thing I noticed in the Guardian today was that Lego sales are up 15% in the first 6 months of this year because we're all stuck in and doing jigsaws and building Lego. So as if they weren't popular enough and profitable enough, they got a shot in the arm from COVID. Now, dogs, pedigree breeds of dog have shorter lifespans than mongrels. Didn't know that because of all the inbreeding and pedigrees. Mongrels have hybrid vigour. The record is 25 years for a mongrel, says that person who sounds like they know what they're talking about. Had a Jack Russell for almost 19 years. He was blind and had dementia for 6 months before he died. Is this a stupid question? But how do you know when a dog has dementia? I had a cat who lived for over 21 years. That's Marion there. Two cats who lived to 22 years old and were very healthy until they died about 2 years ago. Breda, we're talking dogs, but look, cats and dogs. My sister Eileen in Salt Hill has a lovely old lady, Heidi. Heidi is 18 years and 8 months. And although she is old and feeble, she brightens up so much when she goes for a walk on the beach, even at the mention of it. She is so loved and treasured, says Deirdre. And on chicken wings, lots of people dislike bones in chicken wings. Try wings slow cooked in duck fat. The two pin bones are easily pulled out and the two remaining wings placed on a very hot dry pan to crisp them. The result is boneless chicken wings. Delicious, says Kieran. And still on food, Cathy has been on after I told that little story about lubs. Once I was in Quinsworth in Selbridge, about 1990, I'd say, a lady was buying purchases for her daughter for a home economics recipe. We were in the veg section and she came over to me asking if I knew where she could find Man Get Out. It took me a while. Man Get Out. If you take the full stops out of it, Mange Tout. Mange Tout. It's very popular there in the 90s, wasn't it? If you were posh, you were eating Mange Tout. I just couldn't hold in the laughter and explained it was called Mange Tout. That's Cathy there. Now, most people who play sports hit the point at which they decide they've reached the end of the line and it's time to retire from the field. But Timmy Barry, with a break of probably 40 years, was back in goal for Rathdowney Errol GAA Club on Tuesday night, and Timmy's on the line. How you doing, Timmy?
Not too bad now. Not too bad, Ray.
Do you prefer Tim or Timmy?
Tim, I'm Tim.
Tim, okay. Sorry about that, Tim.
Oh, you're the finest.
Now, we better tell people what age you are.
72.
Right. What role do you play in Rathdowney Errol GAA Club?
I'm the chairman.
Right. What's the history of the club? Is it the amalgamation of two clubs?
It's an amalgamation of Rathdowney and Errol, which happened 15 years ago.
Right. And was that because of dwindling numbers?
No. Both clubs were going reasonably well, both of them are in the one parish.
Yeah.
So we decided that we'd have the one club.
Okay. What are you famous for? Which code?
Pardon?
Which code? Hurling or football?
Oh, hurling. It's predominantly a hurling club.
Right. Okay.
We under like, but the other night now it was Rathdowney
playing football.
Junior C team that was playing. We have to maintain our own identities.
Oh,
Rathdowney have a junior C football team, and Errol have a junior team as well.
Okay, it's complicated. So Rathdowney Errol are predominantly famous for hurling, but
to maintain
the identities of the original clubs from 10, 12 years ago.
Yes.
They both have football teams.
They both have a junior team.
Right, okay. So Tuesday night, Rathdowney were lining out against who?
We were lining out against Annanock in Annanock.
Right, where's Annanock?
Annanock is, it's off down, Well, Jenny Mac, it's off down past Port Leash. It's about 30 miles away from here.
Right, okay.
Where I am.
You're in Rathdowney?
I'm in Rathdowney, yes.
Listen, apologies about the success of the care of Kildare Village, because it sort of wiped Rathdowney off the map, didn't it, really, when it came along?
Which?
No, you used to have one of those outlet places down in
Rathdowney. Oh, God, we did. We had an outlet here, yeah. Yes.
And then Kildare Village came along and they wiped it out. Anyway, back to the football. So Annanock, you travelled 30 miles to Annanock. Now, did you not realise before you set off from Rathdowney that you were a couple of men short?
No, we didn't know.
No, because everyone was gathered. Yes, I see. So you arrived down and you did the head count. What happened?
Yeah, we were there like the usual. If you've ever been involved in the GAA,
I have.
Standing at the dressing room door with your jotter writing down, hoping to God you get to 15. Yeah.
Have you got your boots in the car? That was a famous one.
Yeah, near enough. That's near enough. But unfortunately, now Junior C, you see, you can play 13 aside.
All right. But you have to have 13 or else
you have to have 13 to line out.
And how many did you have when you counted them in the jotter?
12.
Right. So what happens then? Do you have to give them the points?
Well, then you'd have to concede the match.
Yes.
You wouldn't have enough to start.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So what happened next, Tim?
So what happened next then was that some of the lads said, well, listen, you'll have to put on a jersey. So I think they originally wanted me to play corner forward. I said, no, I'm not going up there.
At 72? So
somebody threw me number one then and I put it on and off.
So at Tim Barry, at the age of 72, playing in goal for Rathdowney against Annanock on Tuesday night. Brilliant.
That's right.
And when was the last time you can remember playing football?
Well over 50 years, 45 years ago maybe.
Yeah.
50 years ago, could be.
Right.
Yeah. And that was in. Yeah.
That's brilliant. Yeah, what was the score in the end?
We won it 8-8 to 2-2.
Just a high score, isn't it?
We have some super footballers there, actually. You see, that we'd have senior hurlers on the junior C football team.
Ah, I see. So those guys that are annoying, I used to find them annoying.
Yeah. If
they could, anything they turned their hand to, they were brilliant at.
Yeah, Ross King now, he was playing for us. He also played League of Ireland, I think, for UCD.
Yeah.
And he, senior hurler there.
There was a guy. He's brilliant. There was a guy in Kildare.
Absolutely.
There was a guy in Kildare from Athenry. Barry, he went out with my sister, but he was a brilliant footballer, a brilliant hurler. I remember there was a hockey tournament on. He'd never played hockey before, but he was genius at it.
Yeah.
Then he played rugby with the local rugby club. Never played it before, but he was a genius at it. You could just get lads like that, don't you?
You do indeed. Yeah. No matter what they turn their hand to, they'd be good at it. If they were playing tiddlywinks, they'd be good at it.
Yeah. So the two goals that you conceded, Tim, what happened there?
One was a penalty.
Right. Fair enough.
And the other one was, well, I got a hand to it and I hit the post and went back out and one of their lads ran in and buried it.
So you made a few saves then, did you?
I made one.
Oh, one, right. Okay.
Yeah, one.
One save. Okay, listen, we're going for a second record today. We were looking for Ireland's oldest dog. Now we're looking for Ireland's oldest GAA player. I think at 72, you're going to be hard to beat, Tim.
I might hold that record for a week or two.
Yeah. How did it feel after it?
Oh, it was grand. Like I got an awful shock, like, really. When I wasn't home at 10 o'clock, and the next thing I got a call from RTE asking me about it. How they found out as quick as that, I don't know.
And I'm looking at the team photo here, and you know, you're obviously the man who's not, you know,
a little portly, shall we say.
Yeah. But you've brought up the average age there a good bit, haven't you?
Oh, I did. I brought up the average age, all right. Now, there was one young lad on it, he's only 18, and he was only 18 last week.
Right.
Yeah.
So 18 to 72, what's that? Do the maths from there. 54-year difference between the oldest and the youngest on the pitch. That's brilliant, isn't it? You have to love the GAA, though. You know, there you are, you know, the club chairman togging out on a Tuesday night against Annanock. That's great. That's brilliant.
Yeah. That's what we do.
That's what you do. Right. What's happening now with the club championships and all that? Where is it at?
The Junior C.
Yeah, well, everything was delayed, wasn't it? So.
Oh, it is. Well, listen, it's a bit of a disaster, isn't it? Like, you know, we played a hurling match last Sunday, right. You know, Moor Park in Portlaoise. And our Moor Park holds 26,000. And there was only 40 from each team then.
Allowed.
That included the players.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know what I mean? There's no problem with social distancing in a huge stadium like that.
Yeah, I saw one of the...
I can't understand why they don't go on with it.
I saw one of the English Premiership rugby games, or maybe it was a Pro 14, can't remember, but they had a number of people in, you know, in the stands. You know, there's one row, and then they separated three or four rows, then another row. But what's the GAA's president called? John Horan, is it? John Horan,
isn't it?
Yeah, and he said that to Desi Cal there way back. He said that he didn't want to feel that any actions by the GAA would be responsible for somebody getting COVID and dying. And I suppose that was a very strong statement, wasn't it?
It was. I heard that interview, and it was an excellent interview from John Horan.
Yeah, an excellent interview. Yeah,
absolutely. But I'm coming round to the conclusion. And we're going to have to learn to live with this thing.
Yeah, and you and loads of others, including scientists, so we'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, until we get a cure for it.
Yeah, this will be talked about in Rat Downey, Errol and Annanock for years to come. The night that Tim Barry togged out at the age of 72.
Bye.
See you, Tim. Good luck.
No bother. Thanks for
thanks
the call.
Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, see you. Bye.
Thanks.
Good luck. Now, the Free Skelton and Oaktail, Amara Breedney Coolon. Good morning, Breed. Thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Ray, signs of dog dementia are when the dog goes to the opposite side of the door, the side with the hinges, when they're going out. Also when the dog walks around in circles instead of in a straight line. My 19-year-old Jack Russell had those symptoms before she died. That's Theresa Nocton. So there. And Mary Brennan has been on from Kilcullen. 60 years ago, my friend worked in the Adelaide Hospital in Dublin. One day, a lady doctor gave a porter a list of messages she required. It included a pound of cocktail sausages written as 1LB cocktail sausages. He returned with 116 cocktail sausages. Hey! Love those stories. Shane Hegarty joins us in studio. How are you doing, Shane?
I'm good, Ray. It's nice to be out.
Yes.
To have something to go to. It's very exciting.
We're delighted to have you in studio because, you know, we had a long time there where we couldn't have anybody in studio. And just to remind people that we are social distance. We did a full interview yesterday with Eamon Dunphy.
I heard it.
And both of us wore masks.
Yeah, I heard it. And I know you mentioned that.
But it didn't come across.
Did no,
it?
I didn't. I wouldn't have known. Listen, I was sitting in the car listening to it.
Right.
And I would have had no idea.
That we were wearing masks.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have said anything.
No, but I think sometimes people kind of like to know that. And actually, it kind of had an interesting conversation that Eamon was talking about why it matters to him and why this is important to him. And it's a reminder that there are people who we know and have known for years, and you kind of imagine them to be strong people, and yet they have this kind of underlying frailty in which we all need to mind each other. And it was a good reminder, I thought.
This is Boot the Creaky Creatures, and this is Boot 3.
This is Boot 3.
Yes, Boot 3, yes.
So we were
remind
here...
Remind people about Boot.
Yeah, so Boot is a toy robot who wakes up in a grinder about to be mashed into a million pieces, and has 2.5 memories only, and sets off to find its owner. Right. And the last time we were in, it was for the second book, The Rusty Rescue. And so Boot has sort of found these other robots that live in this world that's about sort of a little bit ahead of where we are now, where instead of maybe mobile phones, everybody's obsessed with the robots, and some of the robots have become smart. So the third book is kind of carrying on that idea, but taking it into nature. So it's the last park, the last bit of greenery in the city where Boot lives. And there are kids there who mind these broken robot pets. So there's a broken unicorn. There's an octopus with a toilet brush for a tentacle. I have to say tentacle because I've said the wrong word a couple of times to view audiences.
Be careful,
find it hilarious.
Yes.
And a bear who wears slippers and all sorts. So it's just kind of great fun. This character is really a child sort of growing up. So part of this story is about the things that have happened in the other books that Boot doesn't realise have frightened Boot a bit. And Boot is sort of having to figure out why everything is kind of difficult to cope with. The all these kind of big things that are happening.
Yeah.
So it's a story of of, it's kind of a silly sci-fi story with jokes and friendship and action and adventure, and at the same time said it's kind of like about kind of growing up as a kid.
And one of the big things now with children's book, well, probably always, is the continuity, isn't it? Like, Tom got his latest Dogma book today.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew it landed today.
Oh, I know all 3rd, about it, yes.
Dave Pilkey. And he's over the moon. Now, yeah. By the time I go home this evening, that'll be devoured.
Yeah, yeah, they do. And especially those books. And the other thing that it reminds me, so in the boot books, the illustrations, Ben Mantle, who's the illustrator, yes, does these amazing drawings.
Lovely, lovely drawings.
Fantastic. And they're just, you know, for me, it's amazing because it's stuff in my head that's suddenly coming to life, really. And it's a reminder of how kids love pictures in their books. And I wonder why as adults we start off with pictures and then we add the words in as we get, as kids, and then gradually the pictures get pushed aside and the words take over. And yet, I know the response that people have and kids have and parents who read the pictures, books, yeah, with their kids, they see
the
drawings.
Novels, Shane,
there are, and I'm big into them.
No, but I suppose what, yeah, people would argue is that you develop an imagination, and that's probably the gift of reading, is that we all see what we read differently.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But I do think they can add such life to. Mm-hmm. And I know as a writer, I find them actually great for triggering my imagination further. And
oh, kids, yes. Yeah.
And kids now, kids especially, they're so visual in everything. Everything they see needs pictures, and they kind of have pictures, and they're so able to draw.
I'm intrigued by Boot in a way, because there's an awful lot of talk around AI and transhumanism, which in effect, that's what Boot is, isn't it, in a way? It's where sort of robots and humans sort of merge a little bit. That's the future.
It is, yeah. And I'm kind of fascinated by science fiction, and I've always wanted to write a science fiction book, and being able to write a series is great. And what I love about it is you're sort of taking the robot's point of view, and you're asking if a robot had become smart and they're looking at us.
Yes.
What is it about us that would be strange and weird and ridiculous?
An awful lot.
And all the things, you meant a hair that grows out of, you know, our different parts of our heads, for instance.
Yes.
The noises we make. Yeah. Sorry, Ray. you know, the noises we make, the things we say, the obsessions we have. So it's, you know, on the one hand, I suppose I'm writing about things that are maybe, as I said, are kind of a bit like now, because everything is, the robot's very much based on mobile phones. So there's a robot robot called Noak, who's this tough, indestructible old robot.
Ah, yes.
And there's a robot called Red, who's always worried about catching fire if the battery gets too hot.
So
sort of mixing the kind of obsessions we have with technology and throwing things away. And then with the idea that if robots do become smart, what will they think of us?
Obviously, lockdown has affected you in a big way, because I know from talking to you in the past that you're a big fan of book festivals and going to schools and talks and various things. And that's the fun part of it.
It is a fun part. And for a lot of writers, that's the big thing that gets you out and gets you to meet readers. And especially, and I know I think I've said this here before, and I really mean it. Like, you're talking to the best readership in the world, because kids will tell you exactly what they think about something. There's no holding back. If they love something, they'll have read it 3 or 4 times. So the last time I was in here, I was about to do a huge amount of events for the citywide read. I did 30 events in 30 days. And the last one was the day I was actually in the UK. I flew back on the 12th of March, which is the day the schools closed here. Yeah. And it's been 7 months now. And there are all these brilliant festivals, all these great events, all these libraries, all these schools that are going
cancelled.
And it's all sort of stopped. And it's not, you know, so on the one hand, as a writer, I miss it hugely. And I wonder, you know, I was lucky enough to do an event in Liberty Hall with Ben, the illustrator, with, you know, 200-250 kids at it just before everything happened. And now you look at it and you wonder, when is it going to come back? And then for kids themselves, because even, you know, with the kids, they do so much else around school and in school, and suddenly all of that is narrowed down now. So on the one hand, as a writer, I miss it. And I, as I said, it's great to be asked to come anywhere. So they said, do you mind coming into the studio? I was like, fantastic. I remember during lockdown, I got a text from the Blood Transfusion Board. It was during the full lockdown, saying, will you come and give blood? I don't think I've ever answered a text as quickly in my life.
But just to get out of the house.
Yeah. But then there are kids as well, you know, who maybe are missing out on things. And I just want, if I can mention this, St. Vincent de Paul do a brilliant scheme called Word Power. And they send book packs and with kind of colouring and activity packs to families in Kildare, Wicklow and Dublin. And, you know, they had to stop all of that for a few months. And you realise with something like that, and thankfully they've got that going again.
Right.
I'm lucky that Boot is part of that, but they've a selection of books for the ages that are involved. But you realise, you know, there are kids out there who really rely on a bit of help, and a bit of help from the schools or these brilliant initiatives that the likes of Vincent de Paul have for families that maybe go under the radar. And I think in my job, I'm very lucky that I get to go to a whole range of schools. And the day that I was in the UK, I was in, on that last day, it was a very high-end boarding school where they were telling international boarders they wouldn't be able to go home of the danger of coming back with it. But I suppose I've the privilege of seeing the brilliant kind of work that teachers do in helping kids.
Hold on. Yeah. So it was a primary school boarding school, wasn't it?
It was. There would have been primary school and secondary school, yeah. And you see that. You don't really see it as much here.
No, there's very little of it here.
Yeah, but
any.
You see it. You see it very much. You see that kind of difference in the UK between the... There's a lot of fee-paying schools and a lot of non-fee-paying schools, obviously.
But there's a good few boarding schools for primary
Yeah, and I've been in... What's fascinating is that kids are the same. I think primary school doesn't matter what school you're in, the kids are the same. Sometimes the adults are different.
Right, that's interesting.
You know, in that their attitude and maybe their understanding of the situation and how these kids' lives will play out.
Yeah.
Secondary school, it changes a bit. I think that the children themselves become aware. But as I said, you see the work that teachers and, you know, kind of lots of people have done for these kids. And I think as well, when that was taken away, whatever about me not going to be able to visit a school and kind of talk about my books, I've sort of had an appreciation for what they are missing.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah. So you have four children.
Yes.
And we've met Caoimhe because she was on the show and the twins and then Oisín. What age is Oisín?
Oisín is 15. He started transitioning here properly today.
Right. So they're all back to school, are they?
They all went. So kind of full proper days as of today. The three girls.
How do you feel about that?
Well, do you know, it was kind of funny when they went to school last week, and I know everybody has different feelings about it, but I did get a sense that there were a lot of parents skipping happily away from the school gates.
Well, it was a long 6 months.
And I know that the girls love going to school, and they're very conscious of it. I think kids pick up on things. And they're very conscious of kind of social distancing and things like that. And they all wear their, even though they don't technically have to wear their masks, they love
school,
wearing the masks. Yeah. They don't wear them in school, but they wear them sort of out in the shops. But even today, you know, Oisín said, my 15-year-old said, I'm looking forward to going back to school. You know, and that's 7 months now. You know, I don't think I ever had a day in my school life where I said, I'm really looking forward to getting up and going to school. So I think that, this is where it is now, I suppose. And it's been amazing to see how kids sort of adapt to it. The things that we would never have thought about, you know, wearing masks everywhere, clean your hands.
Yes,
everywhere.
Yeah.
In a strange way, I think a lot of the kids kind of adapt to that. They're less conscious of it in a way.
But I think children are more adaptable around everything.
That's
the nature of human beings.
Yeah.
Because when we're younger, we have to adapt. We have to learn and we have to be sponges for all those things. And then we get stuck in our ways then.
Yeah. And I don't know if they have that thing, because we have that thing of thinking, what will this be like in 6 months or a year? Kids don't think further than 10 minutes ahead, I think.
Right.
So if whatever's happening now is generally the thing that matters.
And any discussion about the face mask, because it's become fashion sort of accessory for some people, not naming names.
Yeah. Well, what do you mean, discussion?
No, but like we had the other night, there was a number of face masks laid out.
Oh, right.
That's not the right colour. That's not the right fit. Blah, blah, blah.
No, I tell you, the girls especially have kind of a great, they do have a nice kind of selection of masks to wear. Yeah. Well, myself and Oisín have gone for the black.
Right.
Sort of, and I see a lot of I went looking for face masks yesterday and all the sort of the black foamy or polyester face masks were completely sold out. So I think all the schools going back. What's a big challenge for me was trying to figure out how much of this needs to be in stories going forward.
Yeah.
And I've sort of been working on something else. And actually, I'm not really, you know, you sort of wonder, well, by the time this comes out. So that's been kind of a bit of a challenge.
Well, like you could, I suppose, look back and consult fiction from the years after the Spanish flu and see how it panned out. I know it was a completely different time, but
yeah, But I
do
don't
people
know.
Want to be reminded about it?
This is it. I had an idea. I remember during lockdown having an idea for a story that is the greatest story ever told that I will ever write, as far as I was concerned, for about 5 minutes. And then I realised, actually, my editor said, yeah, we're going to wait and see how people feel about it. They might. So there is an idea that everybody wants to escape, that they don't want the story set in lockdown, yes, as this story yes, was, this yeah. greatest story. It was going to be about two kids in their gardens talk, you know, who yeah. sort of solve something while not being able to move from their house. And but I don't know. I don't know. I think people do like that bit of escapism.
Yeah, I suppose the thing that you have to remind yourself of all the things that were said at the start, you know, because things are said and they're still true to this day. But one of the things that was said over and over again was that this is universal.
Yeah.
And something like this hasn't happened in our lifetimes before, that it has affected everybody on the planet.
Yeah.
So you have to consider that then.
Yeah.
So does that mean that people want to hear about it because it's universal, or that everybody doesn't want to hear about it? That's.
Yeah. And there's also. It has been a great leveler in that way, and lots of things that we kind of took for granted for so long, like that you could hop on a plane somewhere, or I even found myself sort of, I'm sure everybody's done it, you start retrospectively reassessing everything you did in February and January and thinking, God, I'm really lucky we did that then.
Oh, yes.
Whether you went on a holiday or, you know, I was lucky enough to have a book out in February before, you know, and got a run at it before the bookshops closed. Yeah. And I think there's so many kind of levelers in that way. And yet you do wonder if people ultimately, I do get a sense now that if people would like, is it, you know, maybe to get back to some kind of normality,
of course they
I suppose.
Would. Of course they would. Like right from the start, they would have.
Yeah, so you wouldn't want to be throwing everything around. Into a story that sort of is what we were doing 2 months ago.
Probably
because it
not.
Feels sometimes like it's a whole other era almost every week.
And a lot
different.
Of people I spoke to who are, I don't particularly like this word, but it's a word that's been used an awful lot, creatives. Mm. You would be a creative.
I am a creative.
You're a creative.
Sometimes.
Where did that word come from?
Creative. I don't know.
You are a creative, Shane Hegarty. And a lot of creatives have said that despite what you would think, with all the free time and all that, that it was actually a really difficult time to be creative.
Yeah, I think like everything, it sort of depends on, you know, I think everybody sort of came to it a little bit differently. I think some people struggled with it. I found that I probably found the time thing, I thought I would have loads of time. And actually, I think I realised that my head was quite full of lots of other stuff. And I'm lucky in that Maeve, my wife, was doing this kind of most of the schoolwork with the kids. But you find yourself sort of, I mean, I'm amazed at people who have real jobs, how they manage to do their real jobs and Zoom phone calls and meetings and all that stuff while having in within a family environment.
Yeah,
I find
it's tough for people.
Amazing.
It's tough. Yeah.
So I was kind of lucky in that way. And I did work on something new, but it's probably taken me, I think at the start of it, I fooled myself into thinking I've loads of time. And now that we're almost through it, I realise that I probably didn't use the time as
Jesus,
well.
I hope you're right when you say we're almost through it.
Well, I just mean in the sense that there's some element of structure and normality now that maybe kids are back to school and people have a little bit more. Not that there's, I know we've a long way to go. But I tell you what I did do was I started writing a diary for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And that's been very useful.
They recommend that for a lot of mental health people, and loads of people recommend keeping a journal, they call it.
This is it. My memory is terrible. I forget everything. So it's kind of, so I thought it was a double thing of like, okay, so next time.
Is this with a view to writing a memoir? Or
No, rubbish. No, it's just literally. I just find it useful to kind of write down what things were happening at particular times.
And in the world or just
in your little... Yeah, and then a little mix of, you know, I was looking back on it and I realised, you know, how I'd sort of forgotten how patriotic everything got on the TV for a while. It was all, you know, this kind of...
We're all in this together,
but also, you know, they had the concerts on the TV and you had the things up in the corner of the screen saying stay indoors or... Or even those strange 1984-esque announcements down in Super Value and play, you know, in the shops where they would be making these kind of pandemic announcements as you were sort of wandering around the shop.
I thought those sounded like they were from the future. Do you know when you see those futuristic movies and there's the disembodied voice giving instructions in you know, whether you're on a driverless car or whatever you're in or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what it sounded like. They've changed the voice now. It's a man now, isn't it?
Is it? I'm not sure. I'm not paying attention as much.
Oh, right. Yes,
was it? I don't know. Yeah,
it's a man now. Yeah,
but you're right. It did have that sort of futuristic post-apocalyptic vibe about
that,
it.
Maybe that's the thing. Maybe there's a memoir from lockdown. I'd say it'd be a crowded market.
although I know, honestly, it's not. My memoir would not be, we'll have cornflakes or Rice Krispies today. That'd be the extent of most of it.
Boot, The Creaky Creatures, it's the third. And this is was it meant to be a trilogy? It was
sort of three books initially, and then... it's going very well, so we shall see what happens next.
Okay.
So,
and the obligatory question on Dartmouth. It's Dartmouth, isn't it?
It's Dartmouth. I don't really mind what people call it. Some people call it Dartmouth, but it's Dartmouth is in Portsmouth, Plymouth. So it's sort of four books there, as with
but
everything.
The movie is, we
kind of talk about thinking back on things that we're lucky about. The movie industry has been hit hugely. Yeah. So they've all ground to a halt for a lot of projects in Hollywood. So unfortunately at the moment, that's part of that. And
it was going to be live action. It wasn't going to
be animation. No, it was going to be animation.
All right.
Yeah.
But can they do animation remotely?
Listen, if I knew that world, I'd be working in that way. I have very little to do with it.
Anyway, it's paused
and... we'll see what happens. But I know that that's a tough world and even here as well for people working in that business. So I'm very lucky I get to sit down in front of a computer and just bang out some words and hopefully somebody turns it into a book.
My daughter's birthday party was the day after COVID restrictions were announced. Her tea party had to be cancelled. We bought Shane's book, Boot, to put in her party bags. And so we drove around to all our pals' houses that day to drop off the party bags. All the kids loved the books, as did my daughter, Lola. She wrote a message to him on Instagram to thank him. That's you, Shane. Shane wrote back with Boot stickers and a lovely note. It was the start of Lola reaching out with letters and emails during COVID. Thanks, Shane, for taking the time.
That is lovely to hear from Lola. I remember that. That's fantastic. That's lovely.
That's a nice way to end our little chat. Thanks, Shane. Mind yourself, and best wishes to Maeve and all the children.
Thank you very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We were talking to Tim Barry there. Lee Miles plays regularly for Civil Service Hurling Club in Dublin GAA County Junior League and Championship. He's 73 and will be playing next Sunday in Junior Hurling Championship F versus Fingallians, says Ger Butler. Micheál Gagan, 75, 76 next month, is still playing rounders in All-Ireland Championship with na Fianna in Dublin. He's good, says Ronan. And it was really uplifting to hear the positivity from that man. Age 72, and why wouldn't he? His positivity reminded me of my dad, who only passed away in January at the young age of 86. He too was chairman of Civil Service Football Club, and under similar circumstances I played corner forward when someone didn't turn up and the team was short. Proud to say he scored two goals at 63. That's a lovely memory, Yvonne, and commiserations there in the passing of your dad. And Pierce Bonner was 74 when he played for Cashel King Cormacs. In 1991, he was originally from Killigordon, like Ray's granny. It's my grandfather was from Killigordon, not my granny. So his name was Bill Bonner, B-O-N-A-R, and he was from Killigordon. And talking about abbreviations and food, a few years ago, my pal came home on a Saturday with baby number three. She gave her husband a shopping list, and on the butcher's list was LGE chicken. LGE chicken. Sunday morning, she asked him to put the chicken in the oven. All hell broke loose when they sat around for Sunday lunch with a leg of chicken, not a large chicken. So he thought that she'd misspelt LGE and that it was a leg. As opposed to an abbreviation for large. You got that. I don't have to explain it. Sorry about that. Another sign of dementia in dogs is when they stare into a corner of the room as if they're watching something. I thought we had a ghost before he was diagnosed, says Kay. Now, all this week, we've been on the search for Ireland's... best chicken wings. Thanks to Frank's Hot Sauce, who are celebrating 100 years of making their famous sauces. We're finalists on today. Thanks very much to Frank's Hot Sauce. Tomorrow, Gina Daly will be cooking up a storm when she prepares the four finalists' recipes, and then she will decide which is Ireland's best chicken wings. Today, we're talking to Philip McPartlin from Dundalk. How are you, Philip?
Hi, Ray, how are you going?
Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Now, your chicken wings are very exotic.
Just a wee bit. With the thanks to Otto Lengi, I suppose. He's one of my favourites.
Who?
Yotam Otto Lengi.
Yotam Otto Lengi.
Yeah.
Right, I'm unfamiliar with him. Does he have a number of cookbooks out?
Oh, God, yeah. An awful lot of them. One of them, Simple, and that's where I kind of started my infatuation with his food. Great stuff, great use of spices.
Right, Yotam Otto Lengi. I look him up. Great. So you have it's in the marinade. Now you use Frank's hot sauce to pour over them to the end, but the marinade. There are things there that I've never heard of before.
Only two, I'd say.
Yeah, exactly two. Sumac and za'atar.
Yeah, sumac is a berry, and it's like a wine-coloured berry. It kind of gives a nice, it's tart and bitter, but it's a lemony kind of flavour to it as well. It feels like or tastes like lemon, but it adds a nice kick to it. It's crunchy.
Right. And the other one?
Za'atar. Yeah, it's a blend. It's a Middle Eastern, North African kind of mixture of spices. Again, sumac is in it, only a small amount. Sesame seeds, salt, oregano, sometimes marjoram. But it's lovely. It's lovely.
Right. So those two with cayenne pepper, obviously garlic powder, celery salt, bacon powder, you marinate them. And then when you take them out, your sauce is Frank's original red hot sauce, honey, brown sugar, butter, all the good stuff. Yum, yum, yum.
Yeah.
And I see you do it in an oven at 230 degrees. That's what I do mine at as well.
Yeah, I don't. I try to stay away from deep frying them as much as possible. Like I don't need any more health issues. But it's great. And the bacon powder dries out the skin, you see, and absorbs some of the fat as well. So it just keeps them nice and crisp.
Okay. Well, the good news is, Philip McPartin from Dundalk, you're now the owner of a Weber Pulse 1000 electric barbecue grill.
Right? Yeah, that's brilliant. Thanks very much.
Because you're one of our four finalists. Tomorrow, as I said, Gina will be cooking up yours and the other three finalists' chicken wings, and she will decide who will get the Weber Genesis 2 EP435 GBS barbecue. So we'll talk to you again tomorrow, Philip.
Cheers, thanks.
Good luck, see you. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Now, before we go, very quickly, Ander Christensen is on the line from Nebraska in the United States of America. How are you doing, Ander?
Oh, I'm doing really well. How about you?
Good. Now, we played out your speech to the Lincoln City Council about boneless chicken wings earlier on. It's something you feel very strongly about. Why so?
Here in Lincoln, whenever I go to a restaurant to order wings, they'll always ask me, do you want it bone in or bone out? And all wings should have bones in them. And if you debone my wing, I'm going to be pretty upset. When you find out that they're just putting sauce on chicken tenders, that's a bad thing.
How did you come to address the Lincoln City Council, Ander?
You know, at least in Lincoln, they allow for 5 minutes for any person who wants to come up and raise an issue with the city council.
Right.
You can go in and say whatever you want.
Okay. And you did. I sort of said you were a counselor earlier on. You're not a counselor. What do you do for a living?
I'm actually a chemical engineer.
Uh-huh.
I work at a company doing research on cancer diagnostic tools.
Ah, good work. Ander, your line isn't great, and we've run out of time, but we will talk to you again because you're a man who's on a mission. So we'll talk. Thanks, Ander. Thanks very much. Thank you. Apologies about the quality of those lines. That's it from us. Mary Wilson is on the way, and we are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.